know you can't meditate. If you afraid, then you come along with me. And I know what you came here to do. Now, let me see you get loose. It's going down for it.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
What's up, everybody? Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, and a kid here in the Dog Bowl in Berea for Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Next week, it is time to go ahead, and we're going to start to get into our songs. The kid, we've decided we'll give you two entries. Matt Wilhelm and I each get five.
I only want one.
You only want one entry.
Dun, 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 dun. Sanford and Son. Quincy Jones, greatest hits, song number something.
I think the chances of that being the opening for our show, I think that's slim. I'm just going to say.
So take your two.
I'm going with Sanford and Son twice.
That is conviction. All right, so we've got a lot to get to today. We are going to have Hugh Jackson, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, live in studio here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. We're going to get into our game picks as I am one step closer to steak and lobster. It doesn't matter who leads all season, the kid. It doesn't matter if you lead from week one. It doesn't matter if you lead from week one to week 16. You know what matters?
You got lucky last week. Otherwise,
how you finish, brother?
How you finish? Who's in? Who's on the top? Yeah, when all the lights are shining bright. Yeah, when it's time to get that.
Let me tell you something.
Who the macho man likes the steak and the lobster, kid?
If the officials didn't like the Rooney's family so much and give that BS call on Pac-Man Jones, a coach is on the field and there's no offsetting penalty there, it would have been a 50-yard field goal, and who knows what would have happened.
If fifth were a fifth, we'd all be drunk, kid, yeah. But it's not. That's the reality of the situation.
Right. You know, the window worked out okay in that game, so I'm not going to cry too much. But
I hope you go to the window so you can afford all the steak and lobster
and prime rib
and crab that I'm going to imbibe, yeah.
If I can win at the window, I'm happy to buy you dinner. And that window was nice on Monday night. Let's be clear, folks. One, you know, when you go to the window, sometimes you get what they call a backdoor beat. Well, that's what they call a backdoor victory, and boy, did I deserve that one.
Are you a fan of backdoor victories?
Are you a fan of anything having to do with the backdoor?
Let's just say that was a great victory. We'll call it a come-from-behind victory.
It was glorious. I was happy for you, the kid. That was a great national championship game, by the way.
It
all
was.
In all. Nick
Saban won that game.
Absolutely.
I mean, tremendous coach. Let's be clear, the coach won that game. Tip of the cap to him. Dabo Sweeney, you know, is going to be thinking all winter he had the better team, and he lost.
So you know that debate that we were having with some of our friends, the Buckeye friends, about, and Wilhelm, you knew about this because Scott Lichtenstein called up on speakerphone and was like screaming.
He was our first minute of content that day.
and screaming at Wilhelm when Wilhelm also said that he would take Harbaugh over Urban Meyer in a one game as a coach, just as a pure in-game strategist and a coach. So I talked to a few people around the NFL, and people like laughed that it was even a question that they would consider Harbaugh.
And that's
to be
not
in a
taking anything away. Listen, no, Urban Meyer's built two dynasties. You know, he's a great recruiter. But from a strategic standpoint, my point was, you know, Jim Harbaugh was a pro coach and a very good pro coach.
Yes.
And there's a difference. The level, you could speak to this more than anybody, the level of the NFL versus the level of college is a different world.
I agree. And I think that for me, understanding, you know, thoroughly, which I don't think a lot of people over this way really do, about what he did and how good Stanford got with him and the number of, you know, NFL-ready prospects that he had come out of Stanford, which was predominantly a bad football program.
Yeah.
And then to go to the NFL and do what he did in San Francisco. Mind you, the same team that went, I think, 6-10 or 3-13 and one draft class and maybe one free agent signing, San Francisco was – I was on those teams. They were so bad. Like, our offense – 8 out of the 11 players were like a first or a second round draft pick. You know, 6 out of the 11 players on defense were a first or second round draft pick. With that much talent – with the right leader, which I think Jim Harbaugh was, they became, you know, the three-year dynasty that they were.
I'll say this again. Better coach, Urban Meyer, I think the only person that you could say is a better program builder, because college isn't level. That's why Nick Saban said he doesn't want to leave college. You hear that comment when he's like, I can recruit and know that I'm going to be better than everybody
else. It makes $10 million.
Yeah, I think that he's the second best program builder in college football behind Nick Saban. Urban Meyer.
It's tough to argue with Nick Saban right now. I mean, 4 out of 7, it's tough to argue. You know, what I would say is I'd like to fast forward 10 years and see where everything shakes out with my guy. But right now, absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. The kid, I know you've been very happy ever since Sashi Brown was named vice president of football operations, and there were those who said he wouldn't be able to get his coach well. He did get his coach, Hugh Jackson, Jimmy Haslam, D. Haslam, Sashi Brown, Paul D. Podesta. They got their guy, and it kind of rocked the football landscape. I don't think anybody thought the Browns were going to be able to do it. They did. We haven't been able to get your reaction on the air yet, but how excited are you?
Well, first of all, I think Hugh Jackson is a great choice. I love the fact that he has head coaching experience and good experience. He should have never been fired in Oakland. I love that. But more importantly than that, it just proves that we got our first choice. We got the guy that was the quote-unquote hot guy, and that he came in. And the reason that he came in and took the job was he saw that the way things are going to be run here and that the way that the organization is taking steps in the right direction, he bought into that, and that just excites me even more.
You are a man of the people, as we know. What have the people been saying to you? Because I know that you mentioned to me earlier that, you know, do people seem pretty excited in the Cleveland area?
Yes, the people are very excited, and people are very excited by the whole idea. A lot of the business people I speak to love the idea of Paul D. Podesta and Sashi Brown, and they're like, why wouldn't you run it that way? That's the way successful businesses run. They love that. The people in the streets love Hugh Jackson. A lot of my tenants, when I was talking to them, they love the idea of Hugh Jackson. That what he's done in Cincinnati with arguably in my opinion, a mediocre quarterback now turned to be an upper level quarterback. The streets of Cleveland are excited once again.
Yes.
And as the Kool-Aid mixer,
you are the mixer. You are
me. I mix the Kool-Aid. I drink the Kool-Aid, and the Kool-Aid's tasting good this week.
It'll be interesting to see in Cincinnati next year if the vacating position of offensive coordinator by Hugh Jackson.
They just named their new offensive coordinator. Actually, very timely. Ken Zampezi, who was their quarterback's coach.
That's Ernie Zampezi's son?
Correct.
Ah, Ernie Zampezi. Mm-hmm. I know a little bit about him. But my whole point is there going to be a drop-off? You know, then we can know if Hugh Jackson and, you know, the creative offensive mind was truly the catalyst of what made Andy Dalton so good and also really got involved all the weapons that they have, because the weapons won't change.
Well, Marvin Jones is a free agent.
Sure.
Mohamed Sanu is a free agent.
Yeah, but I meant the A.J. Green, Giovanni Bernard, Tyler Eifert, and Jeremy Hill. That's the core. The other guys are accent pieces.
What will be interesting to see to me is when does A.J. McCarron take over that job?
I think Andy Dalton played very well this year.
He did, but A.J. McCarron, I like that kid's moxie. I like him.
It wasn't enough moxie to win a playoff game.
It was enough moxie to cover the window.
All right, the kid. You have a fan in G.I. George. It says the Sanford Sun theme is the CBD opening. That's a G.E.M. gem, as Chad Johnson would say. It gets my vote. Hashtag genius.
Can we get Chad Johnson for like a weekly segment? He was great.
I'll ask him. I will reach out to him. I thought he was great too. And I think that
he brings an energy that I enjoy.
He's got a good energy. He's got a good view on life. He's just a happy guy. And I enjoyed it.
I'd like to see him get a little bit more media run. You know, some of these former players that get out there that don't have, strong opinions, like, some of these guys that are on ESPN National that just like spout like off a teleprompter. I mean, Chad Johnson brings it.
He definitely does, and I think that he's dipped his toe into that pond, and I think that maybe a more of a full commitment to that would give him the success that you hope for him.
Oh,
because he's
a little more preparation, maybe
a little probably a little more reliability on timeness, things of that nature. I mean, he's got a chance to be Bart Scottish, I think, with a little more.
He's got more energy. To me, he's more
Bart's
interesting.
Good.
But Chad Johnson, I mean, Bart's good, but Chad Johnson to me could be the best.
Bart's my guy.
I mean, he's got a little bit of Deion Sanders in him, you know.
My favorite TV segment I ever was in was with Bart Scott, Ballin' or Fallin'.
And I think I was there for one.
Ballin'!
I was there for one segment that turned out interesting as well.
You were there for one. Yes, indeed, the kid. So obviously, it's good. People are positive about what's going on. And have you got a chance to watch the press conference or see any of those videos?
No, I have not.
No? Okay. He's a good guy, and he's going to be in here with us today. There's a certain charisma. There's a certain confidence and an air about Hugh Jackson.
Through, I heard I was in the car when he was on Mike and Mike yesterday, and it just came through, and I really was happy that they had him, because the day before, they were like really talking trash about the Browns. Yeah. No chance that I would be shocked.
So what did they say about that?
Mike Golick said, I would be shocked if Hugh Jackson took the Browns job. And then, of course, when he comes on the air, they didn't really ask him that. They just said, well, what led you to, you know.
Did they eat their words?
No, those guys.
Kornheiser and Wilbon were killing us on PTI. It was very disturbing because I enjoy them usually. And they, like, killed us.
For hiring them or before?
They're saying we had no chance. Nobody would ever come here. The only, the two worst organizations in all of sports were us and the Philadelphia 76ers.
Well, I mean, listen, our record the last couple years hasn't been good. But, you know, like I said, and I think I said it on Twitter to someone, is there's a learning curve. And so maybe Jimmy Haslam had a learning curve to become, a good owner. But he's a smart guy, and he's got smart guys in place. Now, I really believe in, you know, the duh guarantee is in place. We will be in the playoffs in the next 5 years. And Sashi Brown can ride on my shoulders down 9th Street when we win the Super Bowl.
And the moonwalk from the kid.
Oh, definitely.
All right, I believe moonwalk. We have a caller that we all know. I think Scott in Mayfield wants to talk about the Urban Meyer discussion from earlier.
All right, I just want to make a couple of points. What's up, guys? So,
who is this? State your full name, please.
Number one.
What's your
number
name,
one.
Sir?
My name's Scott. Thank you very much.
What's your last name?
What's that?
Scott Buckeye. Scott Buckeye. Doom, 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 doom.
Okay, so I believe Urban Meyer coming off a loss against Michigan State, with the first loss in 27 games, was going up to Ann Arbor, who I heard about November 28th for weeks and weeks and years since they hired him. And Michigan had they beat us, and Michigan State had lost to Penn State at 4 o'clock, 3:30 kick, Michigan had a chance to go to the Big Ten championship game. Urban Meyer went into Ann Arbor and dismantled Jim Harbaugh by 30 points on the
Who
road.
Who had better talent?
You guys were the top five in recruiting the last 3 or 4 years, just like us.
Okay, so let's look at
two,
the draft.
Number two, against Michigan State, this great coach of yours, as Michigan State's the only chance they have to win the game is to block a punt. And so Michigan State has zero guys back. They're going full go, rush the punter, and you guys leave your two gunners on the outside. Mistake by Jim Harbaugh. Number three. Three national championships. I don't care how many schools, you know.
I don't care what. I don't care how many NFC championships the guy went to. I don't care about Super Bowls in the National Football League. Who cares?
He never won anything.
Marty Schottenheimer never made the Super Bowl. Jim
Harbaugh. What did he ever win?
Okay. I mean, if you want to talk logically, we'll talk logically. But if you just want to scream and yell, if you want to talk X's and O's, the guy took a team to the NFC Championship. The guy took a team to the NFC Championship game the year after they were 6-10, and Wilhelm was on that San Francisco team and said they were a bad football team. The very next year, they go to the NFC Championship game, and if the guy doesn't drop two punts, and is it Harbaugh's fault that Kyle Williams?
Yes, I remember
dropped
that very
two punts.
Well.
If he doesn't drop two punts, they go to the Super Bowl. Then, if he, you know, I mean, to say that he can't win the big game because they didn't score from the 5 yard line when there should have been a pass interference call. If there's a pass interference,
had he not called timeout though, Cap scores.
I'm not,
and
I'm not, there's not a, that's gonna,
if there's a pass interference call there, they can win the Super Bowl. I mean, there's certain plays, one or two plays that go. Either no, what we're talking about is his strategic advantage over Urban Meyer.
Yes.
I'm not saying that right now 99% of the people would take Urban Meyer over Jim
Harbaugh.
Well,
certainly in this market.
Let's fast forward 5 years. Let's see what happens.
Right now we've got me, you, Matt Wilhelm, and pretty much every NFL writer I've talked to and a couple NFL coaches I've talked to. 100%. I was laughed at that it's not even a discussion, including an Ohio State Buckeye, by the way, another one that I'll leave anonymous. I thought it was like an absurd discussion that we had.
But I do love your enthusiasm.
I do too. Scotty Buckeye.
Matt, I got one more question. This is kind of like a little. Matt, so as a big time college recruit, let me ask you a question. What would you do if a coach came to visit you and asked if he could sleep in your house and sleep over your house and recruit you? Would you think that's a little bit odd?
Yes, I do. I would think it was a little bit odd.
I definitely think it's odd.
But that, yeah, and I will say, though, and I was saying this because I think it's odd, too, but it's just another way that he keeps his name out there. He does. You got to admit, he keeps his name out there.
Sleeping over a 18-year-old's house? Someone tried to sleep with my – some coach, my kid is 18, was trying, I'd be really creeped out, to be honest. But that's all I got to say.
I mean,
I'll talk to you later.
Scotty Buckeye from Mayfield. You might see him. What's the name of the place that he loves? Pizzazz. You might see him at Pizzazz, getting the foot cheese salad. He's a big fan of that. Scotty Buckeye, ladies and gentlemen. Wilhelm, that wasn't even nearly as fun as when he was yelling at us on speakerphone.
Not even close.
He was like,
I think he knew he was on live air.
Yeah.
He held back.
Yeah, he held back. He was reserved. It was reserved from Scotty Buckeye. All right, still to come on today's show, we will have Urban Meyer. We'll talk a little Cavs.
We'll have Urban Meyer?
I'm not Urban Meyer. No, we won't. We will not. We'll have the new head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson, will be with us. We'll talk a little bit about the Cavs. And good game last night. I don't know if you watched that, Mr. Wilhelm.
No, I didn't.
No? Cavs Spurs? Don't want to see the Spurs in June, folks.
I will just say, though, that Kyrie is still working his way back into shape. And I would see on January 30th, I think we're going to see a whole different ball game out of Kyrie Irving. And he's going to look for a little bit of revenge on Tony Parker, who is very good.
He is a very good player, Tony Parker. Yes, he will be looking for a little bit of revenge. All right, we'll come back with more. And your phone calls, 216-578-0850. The bar's been set high, folks, for the callers. Scotty Buckeye, the leader in the clubhouse. Can you match it? 216-578-0850.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Got a great tweet that I'd like to share with everybody. It made me laugh anyway. From our guy, announcer Bob, he said, changing my name to Brownie Scott so I can be a pointlessly argumentative caller.
I love Buckeye Scott or Scotty Buckeye.
Scotty Buckeye. I love Fine Man.
Fine Man.
Fine Man.
He even likes to wear overalls.
He gets an A for
sometimes.
Effort, that's for sure.
He does. He is a fine man. All right, 216-578-0850. Let's go to Jay in Cleveland. Jay, welcome to the show. What's up, Jay?
Hey, I was just wondering, now, since we're talking about quarterbacks, what happened to Cardale? Is he coming out in the draft also?
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
If these other guys, Paxton Lynch and Goff, you know, they're talking about size, arm strength. Seems like Cardale, I heard he might go second, third round. Seems like he has those attributes. And if this guy
can't read a defense, and he doesn't know where to go with the football, which is something he'll struggle with.
This is my question. If these guys aren't ready, it has to be coached up, and our guy is a quarterback guru. Why couldn't he coach up Cardale? They didn't win any national championships. He ran through these teams.
Let me try to answer. First of all, I believe Jared Goff is ready to play right away. Paxton Lynch is a bit of a project. I think the most pro-ready quarterbacks in this draft are Jared Goff, number one, and Carson Wentz, number two, the guy out of North Dakota State. Cardale Jones, let's not forget, wasn't able even to remain the starter on a team that had more talent than any team in college football, maybe save Alabama, but I think when you go to the draft this year, it's gonna be more Buckeyes than any other team. He can't read a defense, and I believe the modern NFL game is won by people who can process information quickly and make smart decisions with the football and are accurate with the football. Colin Kaepernick's biggest, the thing that held him back is as teams caught up to what he could do as a dual threat quarterback, he didn't progress as a passer and a guy who could read defenses. What Cam Newton has done incredibly well is become much better every single year he's been in the league at reading defenses, deciphering, and delivering the football.
And think about it like this, though. If you watch an NFL football game and count the number of times that both teams collectively throw the ball 40-plus yards down the field, which is where everybody says, well, Cardale's got the strong arm and he throws a great deep ball. You know, defensive backs in the NFL cover better than anybody else. So Cardale Jones, as a professional quarterback, needs to get good from about 25 to 30 yards to 2 yards and to be able to decipher where to go with the football because, as you can see, who is Tom Brady's deep threat? Gronk? That's about it. So where does he make his living? He makes his living getting rid of the football faster than anybody in the entire NFL within either behind the line of scrimmage and 10 yards and under.
And how do you do that? As a guy who played defense in the NFL, it's number one, being able to process the pre-snap information.
I know what they're in.
Yes.
Prior to the snap of the football.
So it's all between the ears.
It is. And then I know what routes my guys are running. Then you get the hand signals, the verbal communication between quarterback and receiver to check. And you're not checking everybody's routes. You're checking one guy's routes. And in Tom Brady's case, it has been Danny Amendola with Julian Edelman hurt. Now it's always been Julian Edelman. It was Wes Welker winning that one-on-one and feeding the football to a guy that will win that one-on-one more often than not.
And one of the things that he does incredibly well, and this is where accuracy comes in, accuracy is not only fitting the ball into a tight window. Accuracy is putting the ball at the best position for your receiver to get yak.
And that the greatest point is, Taylor Gabriel and Andrew Hawkins are two of the smallest receivers in the National Football League, and they haven't played with the most accurate quarterback in the last 2 years here in Cleveland. But yet Tom Brady has these little guys. You know, Edelman's not the smallest guy, but you look at Wes Welker, you look at Danny Amendola. Why was Wes Welker a 130 reception guy? You know, yeah, he threw an occasional deep ball, but he put the ball in his arms with an opportunity to create, you know, yak yard situations where he runs away from a defender or it throws it away from the defender so that Wes Welker doesn't have to take the hits because he is, in fact, a small receiver.
Yeah, and that's one of the – you're exactly right. That is part of accuracy, and I believe that's where – you look at the best quarterbacks in the NFL, that's where they all excel. And even Aaron Rodgers this year without Jordy Nelson, when he's been effective, it's been intermediate. The intermediate passing game, when you have a good running offense, that's where the windows are in your zones. Play action, a little suck up, and then boom, hit it right over the top, over the linebackers before the safeties.
Absolutely.
And
if you know that those windows are going to be there, you know in some cases, and that's where you hear a quarterback talking about throwing to a spot. I knew it was cover three. I knew I had Randall Cobb on a deep over, and I might be looking to the right, but I'm waiting for that linebacker to take one step to the right and follow my eyes for Randall Cobb to clear him, and I throw to a spot expecting Randall Cobb to be 3 yards or 18 yards down the field, 3 yards outside of the hashes. That ball is going to be thrown into a trash can for Randall Cobb to catch.
Oh, this would not even be a discussion if we weren't in Ohio. I mean, if we were another team, I don't even know off the top of my head, another team looking for a quarterback in the draft, they're not calling up their daily show and saying, oh, we should draft Cardale Jones over these
Our
other guys.
Cam from Canada has changed his Twitter logo to Cardale Jones, and he's the only quarterback he wants. And he is not an Ohio State guy.
He's also off his rocker. I love you, Cam, but you're off your rocker.
He's back on board.
How come he doesn't call the show anymore? Did you guys offend him some way on social media?
I think he wants to only call when he has positive things to say. And for a while, he didn't like the last regime, so he was not going to call and make negative comments. I gather from what he says.
I would say that is fair. All right, 216-578-0850. Let's go to Anthony in Canton. Now, Anthony.
Hey, gentlemen. My question is, how is the staff shaping up, and who would you like as your defensive coordinator?
Well, we can make one announcement, and that is that special teams coordinator Chris Tabor will be back. Teflon Tabes will be here again now. He's been with the team since 2011, sent a couple players to the Pro Bowl from the special teams unit. He will be here. As for your question about the defensive coordinator, there have been a lot of names that have been linked to this job already. I'll reserve judgment and see. What I would like is somebody that either maybe has a link to Cincinnati or a link to that style of defense that Hugh's very familiar with. I personally, and maybe I'm just crazy talking out of my you-know-what, as they'd say, pukus, but I want to see this team go to a 4-3. I think the best defense in the league. I'm fine with a hybrid multiple front, depending on what your skill sets are. But I think when you look at it, the teams that can play 4-3, but you need to get to the quarterback with your front four, are the best defenses in the NFL. Seattle, Cincinnati, et cetera.
And you're right about that. And the reason why is because in today's NFL, you spend a significant portion of your defensive snaps in a sub package.
Nickel.
Which is nickel, dime, a nickel dime hybrid of some sort, where you get four defensive linemen or you get three defensive linemen, four linebackers with one of them down in a winning opportunity versus a tackle or guard, so on and so forth. And so there's a lot of carryover from a 4-3 defense, because a 4-3 base defense, and when you go nickel, you should, in some cases, in all intents and purposes, be swapping out one player. That is a linebacker coming out of the game and a nickel corner coming into the game. That's it. It's a very simple process. So the guys along the line, as we didn't see last year, in Jim O'Neill's defense,
some continuity up there, by
guys were lining up in different techniques, different gaps, playing different roles on this defense, and they never got comfortable. And you see, if I'm a wide nine defensive end, I'm going to wide nine in base, as I am in nickel, as I am in dime. So I get very comfortable using the techniques in those packages.
And let me say this, the consistency leads to another thing. It allows you as a pass rusher to set up your moves.
The same thing we've heard from Crow as a running back.
What they just need is a defense where everybody knows what their job is. They need to dial it back. Like this year, I feel like we were trying to get a PhD and nobody knew what the other guy was doing. And
all Seattle does is play 4-3, cover 3.
Exactly. You just got to get strong in your basics. So whoever they're going to bring in that could get like a basic defense that can be good and then work off of that. But somebody that's going to simplify things. This year it was just too confusing.
I agree with that. I got a tweet from David for Goff Cleveland Sports. They said Goff is very advanced between the ears. And he is, and he is just a film junkie. I want my quarterback to be football obsessed. I want them to be one of those guys. And you said, you talk about the Peyton Mannings of the world, Aaron Rodgers, Phil Rivers, who you played with, Drew Brees. These guys are obsessed.
Carson Palmer.
Reading that Monday Morning Quarterback?
Yeah.
Obsessed with Phil.
You didn't mention the GOAT either.
Joe Montana.
Yeah, that's not who I was talking
about. Thomas Brady. A2 Brute. 216-578-0850. When we come back, we'll get more of the phone lines as well. We can start talking about all this stuff. But this staff, I think it will come together. I think it will come together relatively quickly. Hugh Jackson saying, 2 weeks, he'll be with us. We can ask him for updates on that when he is with us here on Cleveland Browns Daily. But I think this is a staff that will have names that people are familiar with, and I think you're going to see a lot of the connections there to Hugh. All right, back with more CBD on ESPN 850 right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Zagura Wilhelm, here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. We're going to go back to the phone lines. Kid, what time do you have to get out of the studio so we make sure we get the picks in?
I think we should do the picks now. I got to be out of the studio by a little before 2. I got to be in Solon at 2:20.
All right, so let's get these calls and then we'll get them in. Let's go Tyrone in Warrensville. Tyrone, welcome.
You doing it? How you guys doing?
Good, man.
How are you? Well, how are you?
Okay, I got 2 questions, but I want to respond to the Cardale Jones. With this new coach that we have, who that people consider quarterback whisperer, I take Cardale in the fourth round.
Hold on. Let me say this. I have no problem taking Cardale Jones if we took Goff in the first round and Cardale Jones in the fourth round. I have no problem doing what Washington did with RG3 and Kirk Cousins. Cardale Jones, you need to develop him, and I have no problem with that. I'm not saying he's not on my draft board, but if I were to go in this and believe that this is the guy, then no.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying that he can learn. But I want to ask you about this other quarterback that I think a lot of people are not even talking about, and I think he's really more NFL-ready than a lot of other quarterbacks. What about Marquise Williams?
Ooh, I like that guy. I don't know how he grades out. I'm not a scout, but I like that kid's moxie. I like what he brought to the field. He had a superb year this year. He's North
Carolina quarterback. I watched him a few games.
He's good.
I like him. I think he's a guy that you could give
a
look to.
He's very raw.
Yeah, very raw. But he's got some talent.
I wouldn't take him at number one. That's not what I'm saying. But I would take a look at him in the second or third round. Because I'm going to be honest with you guys. I like Goff too, but I'm going to tell you, man, Ezekiel Elliott blows my mind, man. I'm telling you.
Not a two. Let's state your rule.
That's right. I would not take him. At where? If he's there at 32, I'd take him. I don't think he's going to be there at 32, though.
No, I said at like 7.
At 7?
Yeah.
So like he's trade back and then take Ezekiel?
He's projected 12th to 20th.
Yeah. Let me ask you, when I look at this team, honestly, right now,
too many different needs.
Crow and Duke, I feel somewhat comfortable.
Your running back can't be your priority.
I wanted to ask Tyrone this. I mean, Todd Gurley came in and was a dominant rookie. And how many games did a running?
7.
They went 7 games. I mean,
the 49ers denied you the Jeff Fisher 8-8 and got the lobster. Yeah.
Jeff Fisher is the biggest. He must have naked pictures of everybody. The fact that guy is still coaching in the NFL, and the guy hasn't had a winning season since about 1986. But that
neither here nor there.
I played Jeff Fisher in the playoffs when he was in Tennessee, so it's not 1986.
And you liked it.
That was a long time ago, Wilhelm.
2006, I think.
Okay, that's a long
time ago.
That's many moons ago, my friend.
Yes, yes.
But the point is running, you can't take a running back in the top 10 no matter how good they are, period. I said it.
Hassan in Cleveland. Hassan, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Happy New Year. Hope everyone is okay.
You know, Thank you.
I... as we look at all the positions and wherever you're drafting, I just want someone who can impose their will. Where yes. there's no question. You know, if you were looking at John Elway, you see what he did. He said, oh, I don't want to play for the Colts. I'll sit out. But the Colts knew he would impose his physical will. I want guys who can impose their will. Now, if your thing is you're purely heady and intellectual, that's okay. But guess what? I'm not going to pick you in the first round if you're heady and intellectual. I need guys who can physically make a difference on the field, period.
I don't disagree with that, and I would say a quarterback who can be heady and intellectual but also deliver the football can have more of an impact on a game than anybody else on the field.
Yeah, as you look at Jared Goff, the one thing that I, having watched a little bit of film, Nathan, you've watched significantly more than I have, the one thing that I want in this guy, especially as a rookie, is to come here, if he's given the football, is to come in and embrace the locker room, because the one thing that I don't want is an intimidated, young, developing quarterback. You know, I don't think that fits, because then he's not learning to play the role as
the guy,
my you-know-what don't stink, and we might not be winning football games, but I'm owning this process.
Like Jameis.
Like Hugh Jackson will, like Sashi Brown will, like Jameis did. You know, that's my whole point, because I don't want to, like, I'm just going out there doing what I got to do. And
over the last 2 years, Winston embodied everything that you're talking about. Mariota did in Tennessee. I've seen the videos of Derek Carr in Oakland doing it. I've seen the videos of
Bortles.
Teddy Bridgewater doing it, and I've seen Blake Bortles do it.
Right.
That's the key, and some of
that's
it comes from
point.
Playing. And I think he's that guy. When you talk to people around Cal, that's the guy that he is.
Yeah, I don't want
he
that, woe is me, I'm young, so give me time guy.
No, he's a leader.
Been there, done that.
Right.
Yes. All right, Dre in Cleveland. Dre, welcome to the show.
Yo, what's going on, guys? Can you hear me?
What's up, Dre?
Hey, greetings and salutations, guys.
Thank you.
Likewise.
First time calling. Yeah, yeah. Hey, who did we draft first before we drafted Danny Shelton the year before last?
Before that, we took Gilbert and Johnny Manziel.
Okay. Now, isn't that the draft we passed up on Sammy Watkins?
We traded out of the spot where we could have picked Sammy Watkins or Khalil Mack. That is correct. Now, we could have made the trade and then at 9 still taken Odell Beckham. I mean, obviously, we could have taken Allen Robinson at pick 35. Mike Evans is off the board, but we still could have gotten Beckham. Yeah. So you still could have gotten that dominant receiver and picked up a first rounder.
Okay. Well, that kind of sets up my theory a little bit, because if that would have been the case, then it would have been much easier for us, if I was in that predicament anyway, to be able to go with Goff at number 2, because, you know, my situation right now, or my thinking is, man, does this regime want to draft for need or best player available? And also, man, I'm so intrigued with number 97 down there in Columbus, man. I mean, that guy, man, he also is a man-child. I don't know if he's the
good.
Best player. I don't know if he will be the best player available at that time. Or that's why I say I don't know what these guys draft about if he is.
I probably see him coming off the board number 1 to Tennessee anyways.
I think they might take Tunsil.
Tennessee
why wouldn't
you
take the tackle to protect Marcus Mariota?
Yeah,
they definitely need a tackle. You know, if you guys
who's 3?
Bosa?
I don't know.
Who picks 3?
Yeah, behind us.
You guys,
San Fran's
4,
I think.
San Fran's 6.
Okay.
Dallas is 4. Hold on, go ahead, Dre.
I wanted to make a statement real quick. When I was at the barbershop today, and me and my barber was discussing Derrick Henry coming out of Alabama. He declared for the league, and I'll bet you, and I made this bet with my barber that Pittsburgh is going to draft him, man. That would be terrible if they do, you know, and I think he would give us fits if he does go to Pittsburgh.
Chargers.
It is the Chargers. They've got, don't forget, they have got
Le'Veon Bell.
They got Le'Veon Bell. I don't know that they're going to make that. Now, he might be a nice compliment to Le'Veon Bell, kind of the hammer, but I think we're there. It's so funny. Chuck D says, if we're looking for a gunslinging pocket passer to lead the NFL in interceptions next year, Goff is the man. Great. Great. Because I could go look at what Peyton Manning did in his rookie year in terms of interceptions.
Troy Aikman do in his rookie year?
I think he was 1-15,
I do love Chuck D, but I would ask Chuck D, and if I'm taking over-under on football games that Chuck D has watched of Goff play.
He watched the couple of primetime games where Goff threw a lot of interceptions.
Under 3 games. Chuck D, shoot me an email or shoot me a tweet and tell me if I'm right.
And by the way, if we had a gunslinging pocket passer who led the NFL interceptions next year because he believed in himself and was making plays, Peyton Manning did that. Andrew Luck did that.
Didn't Bortles
Favre
do that?
Did that. Favre led the Blake Bortles led the NFL interceptions this year.
Right.
Yes. I'm fine with that.
Right. And had more interceptions and touchdowns his rookie year.
And he threw for over 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns this year. I'm fine with that. Go ahead. Let's get a guy that can actually throw the ball.
Well, aren't you going to mention that he had those stats because he was throwing to future Hall of Famer
Allen Robinson?
Yes, 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 indeed. Yes, indeed. But the other thing to remember when you're talking about getting a weapon for the quarterback, within the next month, Josh Gordon's going to have the opportunity to apply for reinstatement to the NFL, and we'll have an opportunity to be back here as a Cleveland Brown.
I love Flash.
But Hugh Jackson, Chad Johnson said Hugh Jackson is the guy.
I understand that, but let's not forget that last year when Flash came back, he wasn't even that good on the football field.
He wasn't in shape, though. It was a whole – he wasn't ready.
You cannot build your program around – if Flash Gordon comes back and he's at his previous levels, great.
No, you can't count on it, but it could be
cherry on top, but you cannot count on that whatsoever.
It is. You can't, but boy, would it be delightful. All right, kid, it is time to pick the games. And by the way, to your point, I wanted to bring one thing up here before we got into actually picking the games. To your point, starting at running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers in the divisional round of the playoffs will be Fitzgerald Toussaint. Starting at running back for the Denver Broncos is the dynamic combination of Ron Hillman and C.J. Anderson. For Kansas City, it will be the dynamite combination of Spencer Ware and Charcandrick West. For the New England Patriots, it will be James White and LeGarrette Blount. For the Green Bay Packers...
Isn't Blount out for the year?
Oh, not LeGarrette. You're right. He's out for the year. Steven Jackson.
Yeah, off the scrap heap.
And Brandon Bolden. Okay? At Green Bay is the only one that's got their main guy, which is
Starks
Eddie Lacy,
second-round
pick. And by the way, he is maybe eating his way out of the National
Football League. I love when I could just throw crazy things out there and you could back it up with information.
Arizona will be starting David Johnson, rookie drafted, I believe, in the third round.
Yep.
Seattle is down to Kristen Michael, a former second-round pick, but was cut from their team earlier this year, and Bryce Brown.
And actually played for the Cowboys and then
resigned with Seahawks. But I think the beast mode might be back.
Yes.
Is he going
to
play?
He sent a text to someone today saying,
Was it Trey Wingo or somebody?
I'm ready.
The beast mode. Okay, but he wasn't a factor in them getting to this point.
Absolutely.
In Carolina, Jonathan Stewart is a former first-round pick, played very well.
Mike Tolbert, undrafted free agent.
And they had the Fozzie Whitaker was in there. So none of those running backs that you think of as being unbelievable are here. Now, Adrian Peterson should be here, but it's also his fault that they're not. His fumble was massive in that game, and then Blair Walsh, Shankopotamus, we all know that. Without further ado.
All right, let's go. Let's get it on.
Your champion, your leader, your favorite. To get the lobster and
all right,
the prime
let's
rib.
Go.
Yeah, and the crab. We'll wash it down with some vino and bourbon, yeah.
The Bullet is my new bourbon, by the way. Tremendous.
Bullet's good. It is a good bourbon. All right. Maybe we'll have some tonight, the kid.
Maybe we will.
All right, here we go. Matt Wilhelm, you're invited to continue to play.
Oh, I'm going to play.
Oh, you're invited to continue to play.
No, I'm playing. I'm
no, you're
still
playing.
In the game.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know that you're necessarily
Invitation.
In the competition, but you're in it.
If I'm not invited to be in the competition, then I'm not invited to come to
Oh, you're
the
invited
dinner.
To come for dinner. You know, actually, I want you there.
No, you
I want your credit
you want me
card
out of the
more.
Competition.
I want your credit card just as much, but I want you there. I want you to be there. All right, here we go. Pittsburgh at Denver. No Antonio Brown, no D'Angelo Williams, no chance. Denver Broncos.
Denver.
Pittsburgh.
You got to try to make it close. Here we go.
Right on, Wilhelm.
That's right.
Kansas City at New England. Bill.
And let's just say this right now. It kills me to do this. This is in interest of trying to win a competition. I'm going to have to say
you can't.
The Kansas City
Stop it.
Chiefs.
Chiefs.
I think in my heart as a Patriots fan, I'm scared to death about this game.
Let me ask you a
scared
question.
Scared to death about this game.
If I had taken Kansas City, you take New England.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
All right, so that was a no matter.
Yeah.
Green Bay at Arizona. Green Bay's got no chance in this game, Arizona.
Zona.
Green Bay. Go, Pack, go.
And finally, Seattle at Carolina.
Let's hear it.
The duel.
Seattle.
Carolina. 15-1 and getting no respect. Come on, Cameron. Let's go.
If you would have gotten that one, would have been a for sure 50-50.
Does this slam the door?
Possible. If I go up, well, if I win both, the door is slammed. If we split.
The door's open.
The door, well.
But he has to run the table.
He'd have to run the table to tie.
Well, Super Bowl's worth five, right?
No. That was the way I always heard it.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 2-1.
Would you have gone either way on that one, right?
I was really hoping you'd take Seattle.
But didn't you take didn't the Clemson-Bama count?
I took Clemson.
Right. So you're down. Do you count that?
No, we both took Clemson.
Oh, I took Bama solo?
You took Bama.
Did I?
Okay. Yeah. I took Clemson solo against Oklahoma.
Right. I know you did. Yeah.
No, I would have gone I probably would have gone the opposite in Seattle. But I'm glad you took Seattle because I wanted Carolina. I was hoping that I could sneak you into taking KC. But, you know, I am scared to death about that game. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm buying you dinner. And I hope Tom Brady marches on.
Well, it's going to be interesting because on Saturday, if I win that New England game, you need to win Seattle or it's over.
Yeah. I'm aware of that.
You're aware. He's aware of how the math works, folks.
They do teach math.
He knows the window. He knows how this works.
Here's one for you. Are you ready for this, the kid?
Yes.
From Ted Rosenau. Hate to say it, Jake Ruddock is the next Tom Brady. Don't laugh. Take it, quote, to the window.
I wish it were true. Jake Ruddock really bailed us out this year. We had nobody else to play the position. We would have been looking at a really down year had he not been able to play. But pro quarterback, I don't see it. Do you, Wilhelm?
I don't. I think he's a guy that'll get a look. He's a Connor Shaw in the National Football League.
Just doesn't quite have the arm strength to get it done. Might have the brain.
But he'll hang around for 2 or 3 years on a practice squad, bounce around, compete for a spot, and then eventually, you know, fade away into.
Is Connor Shaw still
next.
On our roster?
Yes.
Yes. Fine, man. At Disney right now with his daughter and taking it in for
Connor,
the first time.
Enjoy that Disney World, man.
I love Connor Shaw. I wish nothing but the best for Connor Shaw.
No, you've always spoke highly of him.
Here we go. We've got Niles Warren Browns says, take Zagura. Tell Wilhelm to never give you guff over the Macho Man. If anything, Browns Daily needs more Macho Manus. I don't think you've ever given me any guff.
Never have.
I think I might have.
I might have to nominate the Macho Man theme song then with all this positivity.
You're going
to
run out
By
of choices,
By the way, is
bro.
There is there any
Lemmy has Santino one, Macho Torres? Man 2, some is other silly WWE
Lemmy
song.
Lemmy, is that what you call
Wait
them?
A minute.
I said no.
I think that there's starting to be a groundswell for Sanford and Son. I got a tweet earlier.
I know. I read it on the air.
I got another one.
From G.I. George, you got another one. I haven't seen so much. Bob in Millersburg says, you talk about Windows so much, the kid, you should be getting a stipend from Bill Gates.
Either that good. Or maybe if there's a window guy out there that wants me to do an endorsement for him.
Window Nation.
I'm open.
Window Nation, yeah.
I'm open.
Universal Windows.
Yeah, I know their theme song.
Chuck D says, correct the kid. Push, push, push. Seen 3 games. A little YouTube
push,
last
push.
Night. Agreed, Goff is the best of bad first-round quarterbacks.
I love Chuck D. He's
I like
a
Chuck
fine
D
man. He and I don't always agree. He's very anti-Michigan, but I love trading barbs with him on Twitter. He's a fine man.
He is a fine man. At Real Chuck D 32. All right, when we come back, we're going to wrap up our first hour here. Zagura Kid, Wilhelm, still to come, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. The kid has departed, Dino. It's sad, but it's true.
Oh.
I know. What did you think of the picks, Dino? Where are you at on these 4 games?
All right, so if we recap, by the way, Wilhelm, I admire you for not giving up.
Yes.
For closing out, you know, even though it's a hopeless effort.
It's all about perspective. Do I finish 8 down or I finish 3rd? It's like the Cavs last night. They were down by 15. You look at the box score, 99-95. Must have been a good game.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh. Right?
That's the perspective I'm bringing.
I like it.
Okay, so you got – yeah, I agree, Nathan. Pittsburgh, Denver – Pittsburgh's just too shorthanded to go and win Mile High. I just don't see it. I'll take the Patriots. I will take. I don't know. I think Seattle can go in there and beat Carolina.
They can too, and I don't think Seattle's that good. I just want to go ahead and say that too.
Yeah,
but yes.
But I think
they should have lost last week.
Yes,
and they got beat by the Rams at home.
But I mean, Cam Newton's playing at a high level. They get the bye, so I'll go ahead and I'll take
I want
the two.
That pick back. Yeah. I outthought myself on that.
Which one?
I want that one pick back. I want Carolina over Seattle.
Yeah.
I blew it.
So. And then Green Bay will see their season end in Arizona.
All right. So they
lost by 30, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we're on the same page. Hey, did you relay to Hools what I'd said about quarterbacks?
I did.
What did he think?
Oh, he kind of stopped and he said, I think the Browns need so many things. And the other thing is with Bruce is that he's kind of jaded because he's seen first-round quarterbacks come in and
– not early ones, though, but yes, many.
Yes, you're right.
Three of 22 for sure.
Yes. And basically it's like we chew them up and spit them out here.
Yes.
So I think he's a little bit jaded.
There's got to be one, though. There's got to be somebody at some point.
And you got to keep – and you know, I am of the belief you got to keep going to the well because at some point you'll get it right.
Did you see what Matt Miller said today? I don't know if you like – do you like Matt Miller?
I do, actually. I think he's a great follow.
Did you see what he said today about Goff?
I did.
Yeah, you saw that. I retweeted that for my Goffomaniacs. He said – this is from his scouting notebook, which I read every Friday when he puts it out of Bleacher Report. With the number 2 pick in the draft, the Browns will likely have a shot at Jared Goff, Paxton Lynch, and all the other quarterbacks in this class, given the Marcus Mariota-led Tennessee Titans pick in front of them. If I'm in that room when the pick comes up, Goff is the guy to lead Cleveland to the promised land.
All right.
All right.
So says Matt Miller.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's one of many. I mean, it's so funny because Mel Kiper came out, and I know on his big board, I think he had Goff like – I want to say somewhere between 10 and 15. And then when he did the mock draft and then when he talked about it yesterday, Goff, he's like, Goff is the franchise quarterback in this draft. Like, with no hesitation that he is that good. And I think he's the way that he finished the season, and I know a lot of a lot of people who watch and the only exposure to Cal were those few primetime games where he had some rough games. That's what you take away from it. And I get that. I totally get that. I would tell people to go back and just watch his tape, watch his footwork, watch the accuracy on the NFL throws, the back shoulder throws down the sideline, the deep outs to the opposite hash, the way he throws down the seam, the way that he's always got his shoulders in the right position, and just how accurate his ball placement is. I think he is he's a stud.
After you've watched that film, the one thing is, how does he react in the face of pressure?
Great.
I know he delivered the ball, you know, when getting hit, but I guess – and a few times this year, he's probably been beat, knocked down a lot. And I think at this immature level, you know, being a rookie, potentially starting in the National Football League, David Carr did, you're going to get knocked down a lot. You're going to have to get back up, keep your head up, and keep forcing that. I don't want to say force it, but throwing that football and operating within this offense.
And I think that's one of the reasons that Derek Carr fell, because people watched that USC bowl game and he got happy feet. He got skittish. He would do a lot of Jay Cutler throwing off his back foot. One thing that Goff does very well, he slides around in the pocket, and his footwork is reminiscent of Peyton Manning, because that's all he does is watch Peyton and Rodgers tape just obsessively. So he kind of moves like him. He's very good at moving in those small areas in the pocket and staying on balance and stepping into throws even if he's taking hits. He's tough. He's a tough guy.
All right. He's a Cal guy, so I'll have to believe it to see it. See it to believe it, sorry.
Gerard Cherry would
Cal guys
agree
are,
with that. Cal
Cal guys are all right.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers? Yes. What school did the quarterback that won a Super Bowl with you in the National Football League, what school did he attend?
Didn't he go to junior college prior to ending up at Cal?
He does say that on Sunday Night Football.
That's what I thought.
Yes. I actually have one of those Cal Aaron Rodgers ones. It's great. Absolutely. All right. 216-578-0850, 216-578-0850. We got to get to our guy. Larry's been holding for us, Dino. Larry, how are you?
Hey, guys, you know, you guys are talking about all these quarterbacks, Paxton Lynch and Jared Goff. Why isn't anybody mentioning Patrick Mahomes from Texas Tech? I mean, I've seen that guy 3 or 4 times, and he's just borderline outstanding. What's your take on that? Or is he a sophomore?
I believe that what Cliff Kingsbury and the offense that he runs there at Texas Tech is not duplicatable, even in the Big 12, let alone college football. And I don't believe that the skill set that he has learned there at Texas Tech and the productivity that he has there is transferable by any means to the National Football League.
And he's not eligible for the draft, so.
Oh, didn't even know that.
Thanks.
You got it.
Yeah. Thanks.
You'll get my comment, but I know of the Texas Tech system. It's score 65. Great. You know, there's no defense. There's no tackling. It's running those short routes. That's all it is. It's basketball on grass.
And listen, I like him. I've seen a little bit of that guy. But again, one of the things that I try to look at, what I've learned in my opportunity to kind of talk to people who would have done this for a living and the traits and what it is that they're looking for in certain positions. And for me, I truly believe, this is Nathan Zegar, I believe the most important thing for a quarterback to be able to do, provided that they have the minimum physical gifts, okay, They have an NFL arm. The most important thing to be able to do is process information pre-snap and then process information quickly post-snap and then deliver the football on time and accurately within the framework of the offense. And somebody who might know a little bit about what I'm trying to get at and what I'm trying to talk about here just joined us here in the Dog Bowl in Berea, the new head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson. Hugh, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Certainly very happy to have you here. A few days now on the job since the last time you and I spoke. How are things going? What's going on?
Oh, they're grinding now. We're grinding this thing out, trying to hire some coaches. We're getting some people on board. Very excited about our direction right now.
Have you been able to whittle through that 142 text message that you received and mentioned in that press conference? And is the reception what you thought it would be? As you got those 142 messages, is everyone's ready, willing, and able to get on a plane to get here as soon as possible to be a part of this?
Absolutely. You know, and that's the hard part. You have so many people who really want to be a part of it. You got to kind of weed through it and make sure you get the best fit for what we're trying to accomplish. You know, some people are coordinators, past coordinators, who might not have that opportunity on offense, and then they have to realize, well, okay, that's a little different. Some guys are tight end coaches who have been receiver coaches. I mean, it's a lot of different scenarios that you have to work through, but I feel comfortable we'll get there.
You announced today you're retaining special teams coordinator Chris Tabor. What led to that decision?
Well, that's me and Chris sitting down and having a great conversation about what it is that we're trying to accomplish. We want to have one of the better special team groups in football, all the pro football. He's done a great job here. You know, he's obviously been here through three head coaches, so he's kind of seen it all. You know, and that position is really important to me because it shows a couple things. One, he's one of the holdover coaches that we're going to keep, but he is involved with all the different sides of the football. If you think about it, offense, defense, you know, that he brings that group together. And to me, he convinced me that he was the right man for the job.
As far as the other candidates go, any updates you can provide on that other than you have a lot of good people in here? I saw that look. You're like, you're trying to get something out of me. You're not getting anything.
No, I won't give that away yet. I think we want to continue to get some people in the fold, and then we'll make some decisions, and I'm sure we'll put it out, you know, when the time is right.
The one key factor that, or one key position that I believe, you know, a lot of people are kind of, you know, waiting is the defense coordinator, simply because the Cleveland Browns defense for the past 2 years has been a problem. They were better in 14 than they were this past year in 15. And for me personally, as a former defensive player, are you looking for the guy, or are you looking at this roster and then finding a guy? And is it going to be a 3-4, or is it going to be a 4-3, or kind of a hybrid based on the type of person that you bring in here?
Well, I think it's a combination of what you just said. I mean, first, I've looked at our personnel, and I know our personnel, having played against them twice. And then you look at what's out there for defensive coordinators. And I want the best. And no, I don't want somebody that's going to make us change everything.
Sure.
I don't think you get a chance to hit the ground running that way. But at the same time, we might have to tweak this or tweak that so that we can be the best we can be. So as you go through it, you're trying to find a guy, one, that's the best fit. Two, who is the best guy out there? And then three, who's going to give us the best chance to win? And that's what's important.
When you look at the quarterback position, what do you believe are the most important traits that you want your quarterback to have to be successful in the NFL?
Well, I think the first thing, obviously, it goes without saying, he's got to have arm talent, you know, and leadership ability is huge. Poise under pressure, because on third down, that's when it's tough, and the guy's got to have poise under pressure in that situation. The other thing I think the guy's got to have, he's got to have some charisma a little bit, because he's got to be the face of the franchise. He's got to be able to get this crowd and our team and everybody behind him, because, and I know that kind of falls in the leadership spectrum as well, but he has to be able to, when things are not going well, everybody can look to him and he can make the magic happen. And then the last thing I think the guy's got to be able to do, he's got to be able to take care of the football, you know. That's one of the things that I'm huge on. You can't play here if you're going to give the other team the ball. You know, that's the only way we can win. The key to us being better on offense, the key to us being better on defense, one, we got to take care of the ball on offense, and then we got to get turnovers on defense.
Take care of it and then take it away. Mm-hmm. You've basically been an offensive coordinator, you know, four times in the National Football League, so you've seen the evolution of the game, and I'd say from 2009 till now, it's really evolved as a passing game, and you led Andy Dalton this past season to by far his most efficient season, and for me, when I watched tape, what stood out is the ball was coming out quicker, and it seemed that he was doing a better job kind of pre-snap processing and then immediately processing post-snap.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that as much as you talked about the physical traits in a quarterback, is the intellectual side of it with all the complicated schemes becoming more important than ever in the NFL?
It's huge. You know, a guy that hasn't had an opportunity to be able to see different defenses. You know, we see so many of these defensive coordinators are good. You know,
yeah.
All the overload blitzes, all the mug linebackers.
Disguises.
All the secondary disguises. And being able to adapt on the sideline. You know, I don't think people really understand during the game, sometimes defenses are doing things you have to adjust and try something different. And if a guy can't retain that information or if he can't handle those adjustments, then it's hard for him to play in this league because that's what defenses are trying to do. They're trying to make it hard for the quarterback. You know, at the end of the day, defenses are trying to stop quarterbacks. They're not trying to stop your offense.
Yep.
You got to play to the quarterback just like we will on our defense. We're going to go stop their quarterback. So I understand that, and the quarterback has to understand that. They're trying to hit him as soon as he walks off the bus. So to me, my saying is, you know, you might as well start on your knees because everybody wants you on your knees. So let's understand that. Start by praying, you know, and work your way back up. So
that's a great way to go about it. And you speak of quarterback, and we had Josh McCown yesterday on this very same show just talking about your hire and studying you and obviously looking up to you and what you've done so far in the National Football League. Andrew Hawkins has tweeted about your hire. Have you, in between, you know, putting the staff together over the last, you know, 48 hours, have you been able to reach out to any of the players or at least be in tune to the reception of you now being named the head coach of the Cleveland
Absolutely.
Browns?
Absolutely. I've been fortunate enough to have conversations on the phone, be it talking or texting with several guys. I've had two guys come in the building today, and that was exciting to bring
Great.
To the office and talk to them. I wanted them to know my door is always open.
Sure.
And we'll stop when these players walk in. I don't care what we're doing. We're going to stop because they're important. And but I'm trying little by little to get a hold of – I want to get a hold of every guy on this team and talk to them and tell them about what we're trying to accomplish and the excitement that we need to have here.
All right, one question I put onto Twitter, you know, if you have questions for Hugh, what would you like to know? And this is something that the last few years has been a theme, and you are blessed certainly down in Cincinnati with A.J. Green, who fits everything you want, size, speed, route running, everything. You also had Marvin Jones, Muhammad Sanu. What do you want in a receiving core?
You know, I know why that's being asked, because we got the Smurfs here, right?
Yes, indeed. And we all love Hawk, by the way.
I
Let me make
Hawk.
No mistake about
Hawk.
It.
I love Hawk. He's tremendous. Benjamin,
yep.
Gabriel. I mean, I don't worry about size, you know, because when you think of Antonio Brown that plays at Pittsburgh, no one talks about
plays
size.
Big.
He plays big. Can you play big when the team needs it most? You know, and obviously everybody likes a guy that's 6'1", 6'2", that runs 4.3, you know, that can stretch the field and make vertical plays and run away from everybody. I don't get caught up in that as much as can the guy play football.
Yep.
Is he a football player? Does he have a passion and a desire for the game? That's the guy that I think we want to put out there and compete with.
When you look at the running backs that you're inheriting here, I know in Cincinnati you had Jeremy Hill, more your power back, and then you had Giovanni Bernard, who could do everything but certainly very flexible, creating mismatches in the passing game. When you look at Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson, while they may not have the pedigree or draft status of those two, do you see some similarities with that tandem?
Yes, I do. I mean, obviously Duke really came on last year and played extremely well. He's a talented player. I had a chance to be down there for his pro day and watch him work out. Well, he has some hands.
Yeah.
He can catch it. He can run with it. He's a three-down back. He'll protect. I mean, so he has exactly what you're looking for. When I watch Crow, I just go watch the San Francisco game. I mean, are you kidding me? The guy played big time, but what I want him to understand, you got to do that all the time.
Yep, yeah.
You know, we're not looking for it. Some of the time, the big-time backs in this league, they're able to produce all the time, and that's what my challenge would be to him. You know, let's take it to the next level and be that player week in and week out.
And you prefer more a power running style than, say,
oh,
a zone
yeah.
style. And that's what we went to kind of at the end of the year, the last quarter of the season. He averaged 5 yards a carry, had 300 yards in the last four games.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that suits him, is to your point.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy who is a big player and had his best year in the National Football League is Gary Barnage. And I think another guy in Cincinnati that had his best year once he finally got healthy in Tyler Eifert. And I kind of said, you know, Barnage, as a late bloomer, had his best season, and I don't expect him to ever hit those numbers again, and then you go hire Hugh Jackson as
Come
our head
on.
Coach.
That's right.
And I just, the number of targets that I forgot down the red zone is very similar to what Barnage was and the role that he played on this offense. And can we expect Gary Barnage, who's now been resigned for another 3 years here to Cleveland, to play and be in those, you know, advantageous situations to win one-on-one battles or create those matchup situations to win consistently as Tyler Eifert did in that Cincinnati offense?
I think he can. I mean, he's demonstrated that. I mean, if you have a skill level I don't care what position it is. We're going to showcase it. If he can score touchdowns, we're going to give him opportunity to score touchdowns. If he can make down-the-field catches, we're going to let him make down-the-field catches. I think it's really important to create an environment that whatever your players do well, give them the opportunity to do it. And that's what you've seen from Tyler Eifert. He scores touchdowns. 13 touchdowns in really 12 games. That's really what he played last year. That's amazing to me. So if we can get that kind of production, which I think we can, and obviously Gary had a tremendous season last year, so he'll come back excited and ready to go, and we'll give him a chance to be all he can be.
Fans blowing me up on Twitter, and I got to give a shout to one guy from Berlin saying he wanted to let you know that they got your back all the way over in Berlin, Germany.
Oh,
listens to the show every single day. And you talked about Tyler Eifert. All those touchdowns but one came in the red zone, and I dug in the numbers, and one of the things the Browns were not good at, scoring touchdowns in the red zone, one thing that you've always been good at, scoring touchdowns or producing touchdowns for your offense in the red zone. It's so important in the NFL. How have you been so successful down the red area?
Well, I think it's, one, I think we try to create an environment where our guys understand what we're trying to accomplish, you know, and we have a few theories that we have down there, touchdown, check down, or, you know, and we try to create mismatches. You know, this is a game of matchups.
Yep.
And so at the end of the day, we want to take our good players and have them go against maybe your not-so-good players. And give us a chance to have success. But the quarterback has to be good at it. The offensive line has to understand what they're trying to accomplish because the field shrinks down there, as you know. So everybody's awareness of how to get in the end zone and score touchdowns, you know, you got to be on top of it. So, again, I expect the same here. That's definitely the way we're going to attack it. And I think our guys will be excited about how we go about trying to score points in the scoring zone.
Well, Coach, we're all excited. I can tell you the response, certainly on this program and talking to people around town, overwhelmingly positive. Everybody's happy to have you on board as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. I know you got work to do, so you can go get that staff together. So we appreciate the time very much, and good luck, and looking forward to see this as the staff comes together.
Well, thank you very much. But every time I get on air, I'm always going to give a shout-out to the Dog Pound.
There it is. There it is.
All the time, because our fans are going to be what helps us get this thing turned. There's no question about that.
Absolutely. Coach, thanks so much for the time. Hugh Jackson, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, our guest here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We'll be back with more CBD right after this.